Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Thoughts for a More Sustainable World. On today's episode, we attempt to delve deeper into the global issue of poverty, specifically in the context of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. With me are Nazia and Billy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Caroline. Very happy to be here.
So, achieving no poverty is first on the list of the United Nations. Quite a big ask, no?
Well, yes, even more so when you start to ask yourself, like, what is poverty? I mean, there are people living in poverty all over the world, but what it looks like will look very different depending on where you are. For example, living below the poverty line in the United States is going to look quite different from living below the poverty line in Bangladesh.
Yes, absolutely. I think there's something really important to keep in mind that before we talk about solution. We should understand what the United Nations actually means by poverty and no poverty. And also, like we know, like according to the UN, extreme poverty means living on less than like $1.25 a day, which still affect like 9% of the world population. And so when they talk about like ending poverty, they're not just talking about comfort or wealth. They're really talking about making sure people can survive on more than a dollar a day and really puts into perspective how serious this issue is.
I suppose by defining poverty in that way, the UN is trying to make solving the crisis feel more attainable for them. When you look at the number of people living off of $1.25 a day, it's decreased by 61% between 1990 and 2011. But if we calculated it using something like $3 a day, it's more like a 31% reduction over the same period of time. So what do they say about how they plan to go about it?
Yeah, it is definitely a big task and it needs to be broken down into smaller attainable parts, I think. So they basically have 7 targets for this goal. The first one we already mentioned, it's about making sure that everyone is living above this dollar and a quarter a day. And the second is more general and country specific, as they hope to halve the number of people living in poverty according to their national definitions, which actually goes back to what you said in the beginning, Caroline. The third and the fourth and the fifth targets, they're about protecting the vulnerable, for example, by providing social protection measures, ensuring equal rights and opportunities, both economically, socially, and also reducing vulnerabilities during extreme climate events. The sixth one I find quite interesting as it looks at mobilizing resources to provide adequate and predictable means for developing countries to end poverty in all of its dimensions. And I think you have, Caroline, you have something to say about this. And finally, the seventh target is about creating policy at all levels of government to support poverty eradication for all everywhere.
Yeah, you read my mind. Well, no doubt it's an important and necessary target. I think the concept of resource mobilization to developing countries is interesting because the definitions of developing and developed countries can be highly debatable. And I think the UN itself has a very loose definition of it. In any case, I think we can all agree that these targets seem very generalized, but it could be seen as for good reasons. The targets operate as a somewhat loose framework that allows countries and various organizations to strive towards specific goals without being too constricting on how. Poverty can look very different and exist across all sorts of political dimensions.
Yeah, I think we need a whole other episode to talk about the developing versus developed countries conundrum. But yeah, I agree with you. And because of how poverty looks in different places, a multitude of strategies can be implemented at a different scale in our society. Poverty eradication cannot simply be solved with a policy at the global level, but it requires national, state, city, and local policy to work as well.
Let's dive into some of those policies and actions. I know we've all been researching topics from around the world that are working towards the goal of reducing poverty in their communities in all kinds of unique ways. Nazia, tell me what you're looking into.
Yeah, the project that I'm looking into is quite interesting and inspiring, I would say, and it's taking place in the south of Bangladesh. So for our listeners, I'll give a bit of a background so you can visualize the setup. So Bangladesh is a country of a lot of rivers, and in the south, the coastal area, it has the biggest mangrove forest in the world. And so for the communities living there, it's their biggest source of income. And not only that, they also get protection from this mangrove from natural disasters like cyclones. So the NGO that is implementing the project is called Friendship, and the goal of the project is to have mangrove forestation, but they also want to provide livelihood solutions for the people living there. So what they do is that they train these communities to plant mangroves and take care of the nurseries. And they also train them on how to sustainably utilize the resources so that the future generation can also benefit from mangrove forests. And what really stands out to me is that how this project shows that fighting poverty doesn't always require something complex. You know, sometimes the smartest solution is the one that grows naturally from the community and from the land. So by restoring these mangroves, people aren't just planting trees. They're actually rebuilding their safety net. You know, they gain skills, they manage the resources, and then they can decide how to take care of their own environment. So this shift from vulnerability to ownership, I feel, is what truly breaks the cycle of poverty.
That does sound very interesting. Do you think it's doing a good job? Does it fit well into the UN's Sustainable Development Goals? Do you think it even has to?
Yeah, as far as I've seen, definitely, because it's been running for 7 years and it's already impacted, I think, around 4,500 people. So it's, to me, it sounds like a success, you know? But I can't say for certain if the project has to fit into the UN's SDG goals to be effective, but definitely it has to be functional, because as it happens often, these kinds of projects are funded by institutional donors or private donors, and then they prefer to see an alignment with these UN's SDG goals. Yeah, in short, yes.
It is indeed quite common to have the UN as the standard when it comes to sustainability or development. Although, like most things in life, everything has a positive side and a negative side.
Yeah, absolutely. The nuances of a situation, you can only know what they are if you've lived that experience, you know, and everyone's experience is quite unique.
I don't mean to be skeptic, but I wonder how well do these projects solve the problems? Like, how dramatically has it been able to change the standard of living for the people there? Of course, I see the merits, the mangrove clearly provide environmental protection and livelihood solution. And by that merit, climate justice, but are they enough? Is barely being lifted out extreme poverty truly achievement? I'm not sure, but I agree they're doing meaningful work, but I wonder how far they would still have to go.
That's a really good point, Billy, and an important addition to this conversation. I think the project that we've discussed so far encapsulates the concept of social innovation, wherein they increase opportunities for those who may not have had them before, strives to restructure the social relations within these rural communities in a way that reduces exclusion, all while tackling economic and ecological challenges. I think that social innovation should lie at the heart of all these solutions. What do you guys think about that?
Absolutely. I would say that they should. It's also very interesting because a lot of projects like these, they existed long before the SDGs. So one can say the SDGs actually fit these kinds of projects, you know? And of course, I believe that social innovation should be at the core of poverty reduction projects altogether. So the whole model is built around dignity, self-reliance, and putting knowledge back into the hands of the people who need it the most. And yes, it doesn't solve every aspect of poverty at a national level. I mean, no single project can, but at the village level, it really transforms everything.
You know, listening to that, I'm reminded of something we often forget when we talk about development. We tend to jump straight into frameworks, indicators, and national strategies. But real change, the kind that actually sticks, always started from the ground up. We were like seeing here is social innovation that doesn't arrive from outside, but it re-emerged from within the community's own memories. I think you mentioned, Caroline, that poverty is like just about inserting money into a community, but if done through mutual trust on a community level, it just might work. I'm now thinking of Indonesia, like we have like Arisan, Koperasi, mutual lending, shared responsibility. These are new inventions. They're like reminders that our communities already hold the knowledge to survive shocks, to create opportunity to rebuild their dignity when the system failed to them.
Just for our listeners, could you break down what these concepts are? What are Arisan and Koperasi?
Sure, Caroline. Arisan is a community design financial innovation that converts trust into like circulation of the resource, a rotating saving system that ensure like liquidity reach every member, especially during like a moment of vulnerability. Meanwhile, cooperative function as a local government economic institution where people pool assets, share risk, and distribute benefits collectively. And like a homegrown solution built from the community on the logic of cooperation, dignity, and survival. Arisan and Koperasi redistribute power, not just money. They shift communities from being passive recipients to like active designer of their on economy resilience. So if we try to summarize, like this system is not from formal development system, but from the community's own capacity to organize, adapt, and innovate together.
Yet another strong example of empowering the community. I find it so inspiring that there have been so many examples in our discussion where grassroots community-led projects have really take off and have a greater impact.
Yeah, and that reminds me, like, I've noticed something throughout our entire discussion is that all of these projects, they're all community-based and quite independent from the government. It almost seems like the role of the government is very limited when it comes to, let's say, social innovation. I mean, of course, governments have their own plans and projects to eliminate poverty, but and we're looking at, like, small bits of a bigger picture, but I wonder what kind of role you guys think that a national government has to play in this, or is the term social innovation only reserved for, like, grassroots movements?
I think that's an excellent question. And in the discussion of poverty elimination, there's definitely a lot of need for government involvement and assistance. I mean, at the end of the day, the reason for a lot of these community-led projects is because the government is not doing its job, that the community must therefore step up and fulfill its own needs. I think it's possible for a government to come up with socially innovative solutions, but that's difficult to do when economic disparities, social divides, and inequities are because of the government.
If you depend on the issues and how you look at it. Like, for example, there's another project I know that actually comes from Philippines that has a direct governmental intervention. It's called, like, Pantawid Pamilyang Pilipino Program, or, like, we can call it, like, 4Ps.
What is it?
4P is, like, a top-down program that provides conditional cash grant to help low-income families, the poorest among the poor, to secure education, healthcare, and proper nutrition for their children. A key component of its design is the family development session, or, like, FDS, where the parents gain, like, essential skill in parenting, financial literacy, health, and community involvement. These sessions strengthen family resilience and build a pathway towards a long-term well-being. Many beneficiaries have organized community gardens, producing food, and that sustain household and strengthen food security. A group of beneficiaries even established and now runs its own bakery, thinks steady livelihood. An important part of this project is that also it started as a top-down program, actually transitioned to a bottom-line empowerment of communities for communities. And over the years, children who grew up supported by 4Ps have become doctor, top-notcher, and, like, professional, providing that consistent support can transform future.
Do you think there are any downfalls to this being a government-implemented program rather than grassroots?
Of course. I mean, no project is without its challenge. One persistent concern is, like, how some politicians attempt to use 4P for political leverage, especially during election season. There have been, like, instances, like, where beneficiaries were misled into believing they could delist it if they did not support their certain candidates. But this is precisely why the goals on the no poverty must be understood at deeper level. The UN goals call for social protection system that are free from political manipulation, grounded in fairness, and focus on empowering communities rather than, like, influencing votes. When implemented with the transparency and accountability, the program, like 4P, not only reduce, like, poverty, but also strengthen democratic trust and social equity.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. There needs to be social safety nets, not just to catch people once they've become impoverished, but to protect them from falling in it in the first place, so to speak.
Should the goal, therefore, be having strong national policies that target the root causes of poverty, along with protections that fight against injustice or abuse within that system? If this were achieved, would it make all the grassroots efforts obsolete and no longer necessary?
Well, I think that's a very optimistic thought. Like, I don't think realistically that any policy can be so well executed that the need for grassroots movements will be obsolete. I mean, there are many policies all over the globe that are specifically designed for policy reduction, and most national plans are already aligned with the targets of the SDGs. But that has not resulted in the erasure of these socially innovative projects on a grassroots levels. Policies are, they're a set of structure, but communities are the ones that keep them grounded and accountable. When both of them work together, I think that's when the real and lasting progress against poverty becomes possible.
I think that's a really good point. You're probably right that it is too optimistic. But speaking of optimistic, is the goal of no poverty too optimistic? From all the projects we've discussed, does it seem like having that framework has been a positive thing? Or are there perhaps flaws in the framework that we haven't quite looked at yet?
I see it less as being too optimistic and more as setting horizon. The goal of no poverty is like perfect, but it gives us like something to aim towards, and also it encourages communities and countries to keep improving. The main outcome is that we are moving steadily towards a fair system for everyone.
Absolutely. The synergy between both the community and the state is essential. Although, since Caroline asked, I do want to point out that one criticism that I can think of, you know, the targets that they have set, they're very universal in nature, and it kind of neglects to differentiate the different realities of the different countries all over the world. I mean, it often, what happens is that with these goals, the heaviest burden of meeting these targets falls on the countries with the least capacity. I mean, I feel like that the wealthier countries should have a bigger role to play, not just meet the targets of like forming partnerships, for example, but for they need to have more commitments for systemic reforms. And the goal itself, it's a very long-term goal of, you know, reducing poverty. But if you think about it, extreme poverty is a human rights violation, which needs immediate action. But well, overall, I agree with Billy that, of course, continuing to strive to meet this target is essential. And I find it's still one of the best tools out there to do that.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you again, Billy and Nazia, for joining today's episode. We'll see you again next week on Thoughts for a More Sustainable World.